The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Hello and welcome to the Health Hour of Informed Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and streaming to CHD TV and several other platforms. So glad you could join us this afternoon. We have another two great hours of radio. This first hour is brought to you by the Washington Chapter of Children's Health Defense. That's wa.childrenshealthdefense.org. If you're not yet a member, jump on over there, sign up for free to get newsletters, get great information that's really going to help you make decisions, to make informed decisions in your life so you can live that informed life, which is the theme of this show. Both 2 hours of radio today, we have no sponsors. It's just paid for by the members of Children's Health Defense. And the second hour is Informed Choice Washington. So we've got free speech on the airwaves, and we'd appreciate any little help you can get to keep free speech alive and well. Really, FM and AM radio right now are the last bastion of truly free speech that we are having. Your support is so important. With that, the views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KKNW or CHDTV, and we're not bringing medical or legal advice, just information to help you dig a little deeper and make informed decisions. We do have a guest today, AJ DePriest, but she is has not yet arrived. We hope she comes into the platform here soon, but we do have Dr. Javier Figueroa, the one, the only. Javier, hello.
Hello, Bernadette. How are you doing?
Always so glad when you get to join us, sir. Love your insights into this. So this first hour, we're going to be talking about alternative cancer treatments, all the choices that are out there. And I'd like to dedicate this hour to a woman that is dear to me, dear to the whole medical freedom community, and that is Sheila Ely, an amazing woman. She works with Children's Health Defense. She works with Stand for Health Freedom, and she's a proud mama bear. She was featured in the documentary film Vaxxed, From Cover Up to Catastrophe. And, you know, she's been in a long battle and continuing to battle cancer. So it's an honor of her that I want to bring some information to individuals so that friends, family members, and, you know, when you experience yourself, maybe you'll have some of this information to help guide you. Javier, it's a bit like, really, the worst time to try to do this sort of research is when you need it. Yeah. And the best time is when you don't need it, so you can be prepared. Human nature, we don't always do that, do we? Don't.
No.
We're very reactive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same as finding out that, you know, don't drink, don't smoke, usually good advice.
Yeah. Yeah, those good advice, but because the repercussions are somewhat in the future and we feel invincible when we're young, we don't really heed that until age creeps up with us or disease and we think, oh, shoot. Yeah. But the beauty of the body, and that's part of what we'll focus on today, is the regenerative design, right? Yes. Every bit of your body can heal.
Exactly. Yes.
Now, one of the doctors that I really admire and who I hope others go explore her work and the work of other chiropractors is Dr. Sarah Kotlerman. And she talks about how the bones have a built-in system of regeneration. Your bones are always rebuilding themselves. Every organ in your body is always rebuilding itself. But I have a question for you, Javier. During COVID, the heart was talked about a lot because mostly because the COVID shots can do heart damage. We were hearing from heart specialists that the heart is the only organ of the body that does not really self-heal. It doesn't have really good regenerative. The liver can like almost rebuild itself, the intestines, everything. But the heart is unique.
Correct. Yes. Then it's, well, it's interesting because the heart and the brain are thought to be some of the two organs that could not regenerate. Mm-hmm. Now we know that's not the case with the brain. Mm-hmm. With the heart, myocardial tissue is a lot more difficult to recover from and to replace. So you get a lot of scarring. So a lot of work has gone into trying to basically find a way how to get the heart to rebuild itself.
Interesting. You know, and I trust nature's design, God's design. So I've got to think I go back to chiropractic care where it helps your electrical system, in essence, send the energy where it needs. So perhaps there's more to learn about, ensuring proper energy flow to the heart. Absolutely. I know that when you have heart blockage, your heart will create new pathways for the blood to flow. That is amazing to me.
It really is. And again, it's also one of those things that atherosclerosis, a blockage of blood vessels, you know, now that they're looking back, now that we're getting a little more open-minded in our research, they're actually looking at the role of vaccine components in inducing atherosclerosis in the body. And also a lot of work now being done on treating the circulatory system in the heart as both a pump and an electrical system, an integrated electrical system, because there's, you know, good evidence that it's not the pumping action that provides most of the force for blood flow. There's also an active electrical component throughout the entire vascular system that allows blood to flow successfully. So all these things we're now building up on top of each other, but to the point that, you know, can we regenerate tissue? Yeah, we're learning that sometimes leave the body alone sometimes and let it do its thing.
Leave it alone, although provide it what it needs to do what it needs to do. It's really those supportive modalities that really excite me. So I want to start, though, Javier, a little bit right here. Like some of the policies and the regulations and the rules and the laws and the agencies that do a good job of limiting what we can try or how easy it is for us to try. So, you know, at the NIH, National Institute of Health, they have an Office of Cancer Complementary and Alternative Medicine.
Yes.
And what's really interesting about this is the way they're just assuming that standard of care allopathic approaches to cancer are a given. You're going to do those, but are you also going to do complementary and alternative medicine?
Right.
And are you going to dare try these untested alternative medicines all by themselves and skipping the standard of care? I mean, the bias is so massive, right?
Right. That is exactly it. It is a massive bias. Vitamin C therapy has, you know, vitamin C infusion has been shown to help with slowing down tumor growth in some cases. Turning it back, the use of autophagy, that is restricted eating or even restricted drinking. Some people, there's a number of anecdotal studies, but there's so many of them now of people going on 30-day fasts and literally letting the body eat the tumor. So there's a lot of those studies that do occur, that some very aggressive tumors have been able to be controlled by extreme fasting.
And you know what's really interesting? At the turn of the last century, out in Washington State, I can't remember her name, there was a woman who really believed that in the extreme fasting to heal. Unfortunately, she was a little bit of a wackadoodle. And I hate it when wackadoodles give good therapies a bad name because they take it to the extreme. And there's a really good book by, I think the author's name was Greg Olson. I used to know him when I lived out in Washington. He was an author in a group I belonged to. And he wrote a book called Starvation Heights. And is that familiar to you?
People, you know, for some reason it's tickling my brain.
She did starve them beyond, I mean, to the point of like emaciation and death. And it was not good. So often she did cure them, but she also killed them in the process.
Right.
So not good. But the whole idea of restricting food and what that does has been around for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
But science is just now catching up with really how it works and why it works. And it goes back to the body's design. It's my understanding with fasting that, you know, we sort of, as humans on the planet, are not really meant to eat 24 hours a day.
No.
We're not really even supposed to eat, say, 18 hours a day.
Right.
It used to be you would, you know, finish eating sometime in 6 or so, you know, and depending on the time of year, when it got late, people would go to bed early because it was dark and you didn't have all this artificial light. And you would go 12, 14, 16 hours with no food. And then you would have your breakfast, your break fast, all those hours later. And you know, this is, our bodies need that. And after about 12 or so hours, especially at 14 hours, our bodies say, hey, no incoming food. I'm going to go into, I say autophagy, you say autophagy, right? Autophagy. And it's really your body's handyman phase, in yep. essence.
Exactly.
It goes around and it looks for broken proteins and stray things that don't belong, cancer cells, and it gobbles them up and it brings nutrients to where it goes and it repairs things. And it's a beautiful state that we're supposed to be in once a day.
Correct. That's exactly it.
But modern lifestyle, sometimes we're not in it for months or years or decades at a time.
Or decades. And that's a problem. So one of the beauties of autophagy or autophagy is that the body will actually go out and look for cells that are senescent. That is, that they're alive, but are not working properly or that are cancerous. And they mm-hmm. will consume them basically to support the functions of the body. And that's because one of the key benefits of fasting is that it'll use other resources first before going after muscle. And as a matter of fact, it's designed to preserve muscle function above everything else.
Mm.
So release human growth hormone when you're in a fasting phase. Human growth hormone has the benefit of preserving muscle to a great degree and forcing the body to consume fat or anything it identifies as senescent or cancerous. And that's the incredible part.
So your body will literally use cancer as fuel and it'll gobble it up like Pac-Man to just
correct
to keep from gobbling your heart. It will gobble the cancer.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of these paleo diets are in essence, highly ketogenic. That is, you're not getting a lot of sugar, mm-hmm. or any sugar at all.
Excuse right. me. Yeah. And cancer feeds on sugar. I mean,
right.
That seems to be highly accepted, even among those making a lot of money off of chemo treatments. They will. It has always floored me though. Years ago, I accompanied a friend to cancer treatments, the standard ones. And, you know, they would bring juices and cookies and sugar in essence to the cancer patients. It's like,
yep.
What the heck are you doing, folks?
What are you doing? Yep.
Yeah. Now, thanks to, you know, complementary care, which is now acknowledged, there is at least a lot more acceptance of embracing things like changing of diet, avoiding sugar, even some intermittent fasting. They say to help the chemo work or to help the radiation work. But I mean, there is the possibility, of course, of choosing them on your own. And we're going to get to that next. I want to share next with you some information here. Oh, wait, let me switch over to this other one. There we go. Share this tab instead. Here we go. So the American Cancer Society And, you know, I'm a skeptic, so I apologize if anybody's listening is in the cancer business and you're a fantastic ethical doctor treating cancer. I'm going to come at this as a from a skeptical view. That's who I am as far as some of the cancer treatments go. So they talk about alternative treatments, and the way they describe them is alternative medicine refers to unproven or disproven methods used instead of standard medical treatments to prevent, diagnose, or treat cancer. They have not been thoroughly tested in clinical trials, or they have not been, or they've been tested and found not to work against cancer. Some examples of alternative methods include special diets, certain supplements and herbs, high doses of vitamins, homeopathy, Laetril, and Rife machines. And I know I've heard of Rife machines and people on the show have talked about them, but I have forgotten what that is. Do you recall Rife machines?
Oh, yeah. So Raymond Rife was an inventor, and he first developed a system of using lenses and electromagnetic fields, magnets, to visualize bacteria and viruses at a time that electron microscopes had not yet been invented. And he hypothesized that, well, if I can visualize and dependent on frequencies that I use, light frequency and magnetic field frequencies, maybe I can actually measure them and then destroy them based on their frequencies. So the Rife machine, that particular hypothesis, that particular therapy was based on being able to emit certain frequencies against cells and viruses to destroy them, basically through a resonance effect.
Is it still used today anywhere?
In the 1930s, it was highly targeted by the AMA as a quack invention, and he was attacked. His research was basically run through the mud. I think a lot of the research, if I remember correctly, the clinical trials were designed to fail and show no effect, and the technology was basically put into the dustbins.
Wow. It's hard to trust anything when you know it's when it's big business, to know what's going on. This, why do people use alternative cancer treatments? This website, the cancer.org, says because people want to do everything they can to fight cancer. They're seeking a treatment approach that might have fewer side effects. They want to be able to control how their cancer is treated. They prefer alternative theories of health and disease as well as alternative treatments, and they may have seen information online or in other places that sounds helpful. Well, yeah, so what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with that.
But they do acknowledge that using alternative medicine is your decision. I absolutely agree. What we're going to get to here in a little bit, though, Javier, is that unfortunately it is your decision if you're an adult. You can go out there and seek these on your own.
Right.
For practitioners, they have to be very careful saying they're using these to treat your cancer.
Right.
Because two entities will come down on them hard. The Federal Trade Commission will go after them for making claims that there are no, long-term clinical trials for. Or sometimes there are, but they go after them anyway because the FDA hasn't approved them. The most recent example of this doesn't have to do with cancer, but ivermectin, right? Where everybody was attacked. And then the licensing boards get involved with this. So the
politicization?
Thank you. Of medicine really does so much harm. And makes it difficult for practitioners and patients to try different medicines. And what I hope for, Javier, I'd love to see it before I die. So we got I'm 60, 40 years plus, right? I'm going to live a long life.
There you go.
I'd love to see, I don't want it to be called alternative, mate. They're just choices. But I'd love, and because there's so many choices and no one approach is right for anybody. I'd love people to be able to go to a center where all of these are offered as a cornucopia, and your individual health, your genetics, everything about you helps you choose and tailor the right approach for you.
Exactly.
Some of those are coming on board. There are some treatment centers that are available that are alternative treatment centers. It's not the complete cornucopia, and often you can only access them if you're choosing to do traditional treatment at the same time, but not always. There's a few coming on board. Children are a whole different ball game.
That's exactly it. And again, one of the things that we have to remember is that ivermectin was censored heavily, mm-hmm. but ivermectin is also a wonder drug that has shown anti-cancer properties. Mm-hmm. It keeps on showing anti-cancer properties in a number of models. And I don't know, I'll have to look this up, but I don't know if ivermectin has been used in clinical trials for cancer treatment, but I'll look that up. I know that in animal models and in cell culture, it's shown very surprising effects.
Yes, it's really exciting to see what it can do. And, you know, it's a semi-natural product. It's the byproduct of fermented soil bacteria. So I love that it may be doing something very systemically in a very natural way to encourage your body to overcome. I wanted to share with you, let's see if I can find this here. I've got, here we go. You mentioned that the Rife machine was considered quack. So I found it interesting. Let's go to Quack Watch. let me see if I can make this big enough for us all to see a little bit better. There we go. So some of these, let's go through here and see what they talk about myths and facts. And this is funny. Do power lines cause cancer? They're putting that in myths and facts. Is that insane?
So the evidence, I mean, they've exceeded the evidence threshold to show that 60 hertz power line frequencies are associated with childhood cancers. Mm-hmm. That's already well established in the literature. It took an immense effort on the part of the federal government to try and obfuscate the effect by publishing so many studies that they basically averaged it out.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a lot of work to water down the evidence. But now, luckily enough, has built that they're having to admit. And I do hope we get some changes in regulations and policies and laws regarding exposure so that people...
Absolutely. Yeah. It's about time.
It's about time. It really is. So here, there's just so much in here cracks me up. So here are the dubious treatments. So here we got alkaline diet. So I know that, I mean, there's a huge relationship between the alkaline acid balance. I guess maybe we ought to have a whole program on that alkaline acid balance and how important it is. What do you know about it from your work?
Usually with you want to maintain an alkaline state in your body. Acidification of the system is usually associated with a disease state. And it seems to promote the survival of precancerous cells in the body, and it creates an environment for them to live in. So having an alkaline diet is usually associated with better response to cancer therapies or not getting cancer at all. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that they would use the word dubious treatment.
Yeah.
Not unproven, not tested, just dubious treatments.
Just to steer people away, to discourage them from it. When I first discovered alkaline and got into it was many years ago. My son was like 4 years old. And I think I've told this story before because I had a urinary tract infection. I didn't want to go get any drugs. So I was looking up natural treatments and I discovered the baking soda treatment. You know, it's the antacid cure on the Arm & Hammer box, right? And by gum, it worked. Within an hour of your first dose, everything's getting better. It's just amazing how that worked. So I began exploring that and I found out that, you know, in the 1940s that Arm & Hammer used to have ads that said that it was a cure for flu and colds. So the next time I felt cold or flu symptoms coming on, I alkalized myself. I did the baking soda, I quit the coffee, and by gum, it always, always worked. The only time it didn't prevent full-blown symptoms was with COVID. And it was part of my regimen that I did along with ivermectin and zinc and the rest of the things. But I think that that something about that spike protein that was altered in a lab in Wuhan really had a sort of infectiveness and where it infected you in a way that was not as impacted as strongly by, you know, the baking soda.
Right.
As other coronaviruses and flus and such I had experienced in the past, but it was quite amazing. And so, and then I started looking at, when you look at diets that are put out there as being healthy for human beings, like Mediterranean diet, or just a moderate diet where you eat fruits and vegetables and whole foods, and you are have very moderate amounts of, say, even meat, but wine, sugar, fats, that sort of stuff. Well, the things that you're supposed to be very limited or moderate on, those are acidifying foods.
Right.
And all the foods that they say eat plenty of are right down the middle of the road.
Right.
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 So it's like, if this matches health, absolutely matches health. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, okay. So they go on to talk about the Brzezinski method, and that's one that we can go explore a little bit. In fact, I've got a video that I'd like to play. Oh, Nathan, if you're tuned in here, this might be a good place. Do you see, I put in our Dropbox, I think I forgot to email you that there is a little clip. It says, if you've got access to that to help us play that would be great. Thank you. It's besides the one that I have for the second hour. But that's been around, the Brzezinski method has been around forever. And I can't explain that one very well. AJ was going to be able to talk about that. But we can show this video. But we'll move on as Nathan's looking for it. Antioxidants. Now, how can antioxidants not be essential for... Oh, here we have this. Thank you, Nathan. I'm going to go ahead and click this. This is a clip from, let me make sure I give full credit to what I took that from. If I could find my, I apologize, I keep losing my PDF that I have everything listed. Hold on, I will get it, sir. And we have dead air. Hello.
Let's yeah, so antioxidants, I mean, Linus Pauling was the first pioneer in really pushing vitamin C as a treatment for, or at least keeping cancer at bay, high dose vitamin C. And that's, I'll have to look back into that. I'm not too familiar with what the mechanism of action is for the high dose vitamin C to have an effect like that on cancer cells. But yeah, Stanislaw Brzezinski over in Texas had been, you know, targeted. Basically, the FDA and the FTC really came down hard on him, even though, you know, and there were his congressional hearings where he had just about every single one of his patients come in and testify that, no, you know, this is for us, it helped. We want to have the ability to try. We don't want to be limited in our approaches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, the government is there to protect our freedoms and rights, mm-hmm. not to limit our ability to do things that are, you know, lawful and legal.
Exactly. And that is,
if you want to go and do something that isn't proven or is considered unproven at this point, you have the right to do that. And what you do between you and your doctor, that's up to you.
That's absolutely, absolutely. And where they try to suppress it is through the doctor, through threatening the doctors.
Right.
So the clip we're about to show is from, it's on YouTube. Film is Now Movies is who has this uploaded, and it's called Suppressing a Cure for More Than 40 Years. Brzezinski, the Cancer Cure Cover-Up, full documentary. So it's from a full documentary, but we'll just be playing this clip if I can get it going. Here we go.
It is very difficult for some reason to obtain permission to treat patients in the United States. I think this country has the finest bureaucratic regulations in the world, and the other countries are way behind. Here, the patient has to go to very difficult bureaucratic process, which usually most of the patients will not be able to go through because they die during the process. For some reason, they don't want to have cure of cancer.
My name is Sergeant Rick Schiff. I'm an 11-year veteran of the San Francisco Police Department. I hold the department's highest medal of honor for bravery. That used to mean a lot more to me than it does now. What I'd like to talk to you about today is my now 7-year-old daughter. This is an identical twin. Her sister is now dead. Her sister, when she was 4 years old, Kristen, developed a highly malignant brain tumor that had spread throughout her spine and her brain. The doctors told us that we had really two options: take her home, let her die, or bring her in for massive dosages of chemo and radiation simultaneously. In either event, she was going to die. They were quite certain of that, and very quickly. Believing her only chance to be the standard route, we gave her the chemo and radiation. It burned her skull so bad she had second-degree burns and her hair never came back. To change her diapers, we had to wear rubber gloves because her urine was so toxic and it burned her. At the end of 6 months, miraculously, she survived the standard treatment, although there was a high expectation she wouldn't. She still had cancer. We were told, sorry, we've done everything we can. Now she's going to die, probably within a couple of months. My wife and I, choosing not to accept that, started reading. The first book I picked up, the third chapter, discussed Dr. Brzezinski. As you may guess, I have some expertise in fraud. In fact, I'm quite certain there are enough attorneys in the room that I could be voir dired as an expert in fraud. And I conducted my own investigation. I have no doubt the man is not a fraud. I have no doubt that he does what he does out of earnest belief that his medicine works. And now you're in a position to judge for yourselves whether it works or not, but it's well established by the FDA that it's non-toxic. 18 months later, we took my daughter off the antineoplastin. She had not died. She had no signs of tumor. She remained free for 18 months of cancer. Within a month, the cancer was widespread in her brain. We put her back on Brzezinski's. By the way, at the objections of our doctors, for some reason felt that it had failed her. We put her back on. Within 9 weeks, the tumor was completely gone. She died last July of neurological necrosis. Her brain fell apart from the radiation. The autopsy showed that she was completely cancer-free. Out of 52 cases of that disease ever, no one died cancer-free, just Chrissy. So she didn't die of a terminal illness. She died of my inability to care for her properly, and she died from bad advice. She died because there's a government institution that disseminates false information and is not looking out for the welfare of the people. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I swore an oath 11 years ago, and I think most of us in this room swore it at one time or another to uphold the Constitution. It says life right in the beginning.
There we go. So that's so powerful. It tears me up every time I see that. And that was 1996, and the battle continues between, you know, the high profit approach and, you know, all the other approaches. So let's go ahead and move on. I think that's enough sadness. And I did want to point out one thing, though. It's really challenging for parents of children who have cancer.
Yeah.
Because in this nation, if a child has experienced something that's potentially life-threatening and a parent does not choose standard of care, they consider it medical neglect.
And again, that I find so disgraceful. I mean, there's a legal process to go through to file medical neglect. And unfortunately, it's a shaming tactic now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is. And it's very scary.
Yeah.
The choices that parents have. And I know a woman now whose daughter's going through cancer, and you know, they are doing the traditional and supporting it with alternative and complementary. And but they have friends who took their child out of the country to get treatment, and now they can't come back because they'll be arrested.
So I find that ridiculous. How is that? If you decide to leave the country, because there's legal restrictions on the doctors here, and you decide to go to another country to receive treatment, that's none of the business of any regulatory agency.
Right. Right. And, you know, in the next hour, Javier, you and I are discussing Vote for Health Freedom. So one of the ways that why your vote is so important, because issues like this, a lot of times in the, you know, medical freedom movement, you know, vaccinations kind of dominates, you know, protect your rights to exemption. But so much about our health and our and medicine and what we're allowed to do and not do, those are medical freedom issues that are in some ways more important. I mean, just massive interference in our lives. And so that's what we're going to be discussing in the next hour.
Nice.
But let's talk about, so it's so funny because I have in my notes of what I want to talk about, you already hit on the very top thing that I put on the list, which is the fasting, intermittent fasting. You know, in my memory, and does this match yours, the gold standard for cancer cell death, for reaching that apoptosis, is autophagy, is fasting, correct? So when
yes,
and when they want to measure how well a cancer treatment does, a new drug, a chemotherapy, or whatever, they measure it against how well fasting works, is my understanding.
Yeah.
But they don't fully embrace as the treatment the fasting, which is so annoying.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons, and unfortunately this has become ingrained into a lot of medical practice, is that doctors are taught that patients want fast and easy and something that doesn't disrupt their lives. And that's sort of been beaten into their heads. The idea of fasting, depriving yourself of food for 7 days, 14 days, 21 days, it's asking a lot. It's asking a lot of any human being. But at the same time, if you have a cancer that has, you know, a great certainty of killing you, that's something that, you know, maybe, okay, I will give, you know, 21 days of fasting. Sure, I'll try that. There's a lot of evidence for it. Fasting has even been part of religious practices as a way of purifying the soul, but also purifying the body, which is, you know, again, is that medical wisdom passed through the ages, or just spiritual wisdom passed through the ages? It's now coming to be seen as, you know, actually quite valid.
Yeah. And I really think it's both. We all know that stress and depression, sadness, grief, those harm your health.
Yes.
And you cannot separate the spiritual individual, the emotional individual, from their physical health. No, they're all interconnected. We're energetic beings.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's becoming more and more apparent every day.
Yeah, exactly. So fasting is something for people to explore. Alkaline diets is something for people to explore. And it's so funny, if we had continued down that list of quackery, all the things that we support are like listed there. Vitamin C, they consider to be, it's just cracking
quackery.
Me. Okay. Yeah. Chiropractic care, because we've featured chiropractic care a lot on this show, and I can't sing its praises enough, because, you know, I mean, if your electrical pathways are not working, right? If the energy isn't going to where it needs to go to heal you, then all this other stuff can't do its job. So I do encourage individuals to go research and find, you know, good chiropractic care as part of just their everyday health approach, but also at times of severe disease.
Exactly.
You know, if you would need that. All right. So then there's two diets that I'd like to talk about. One is the Hallelujah diet, which is meatless. Have you heard of the Hallelujah diet?
I've not heard of the Hallelujah diet.
I'll read a bit from the back. It says, it's the biblical foundation of the diet and the power of God's living foods. It talks about the role modern medicine plays in our society. The Hallelujah diet in detail, including the importance of eating, living, and organic foods, incorporating exercise, sunlight, fresh air, and clean drinking water into our lives, stress and emotional balance, the importance of getting adequate rest, how to make choices, set goals, and chart the course for success. So a lot of people have followed this for many, many years. And it's a shame that AJ was unable to join us. Maybe we'll get her in the next hour. Because she actually, if I'm recalling correctly, this is her book. She lent it to me. She helped with the writing and editing of this book. Yeah. Okay. So I'm hoping that if I'm remembering right, and George Malcolmus is the name of the individual. If I'm remembering that right, AJ, you'll have to correct me. But that one is, if I recall, vegetarian approach. And there are other vegetarian approaches. Oh, so you're familiar with it there. Yeah. To healing. I remember years ago, there was a diet that was popular for treating cancer and other severe disease called macrobiotics. Do you remember macrobiotics?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that. And again, that's actually, that was derived from a Japanese a gentleman that basically said, hey, you know what? Macrobiotic diets is eat what's around you. Mm. Right? It says there's a reason you're living where you are. Your body's adapting to where you are. Mm-hmm. Eat from what's around you. And that's what he called it.
Yeah.
The other one that I read was this one. And I don't know if it's backwards or not. This is a story of an MD whose mother had cancer, stage 4 terminal cancer, I believe. Mm-hmm. And she did a combination of fasting and ketosis in order to basically the cancer.
Read people the title and the author of that, please.
Any way you can. And I can, is it backwards?
No, it's forwards. It's forwards.
Okay. Any way you can. Basically, Dr. Bosworth shares her mom's cancer journey, and it's a beginner's guide to ketones for life. And it's just a fantastic read because she was, you know, an MD trained as an allopathic doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, her mother was not doing well with chemotherapy, wasn't responding. So this was a Hail Mary pass. She mm-hmm. heard, okay, maybe ketosis and fasting would be a path forward. And
wow. It's all approaches to tap into the body's ability to regenerate, to self-heal. It's such a different approach than the just radiate and chemo blast something out of you. And you have to help the body heal and help the healing systems. You have to make sure that those healing systems work, which is why the right food, the right herbs, the right, for everybody, it'll be different protocol to detoxify, pull the poisons out, and then the chiropractic care, making sure the energy is going where it needs. And Weston Price Foundation also has some information. I do encourage folks to check out, just do a search for Weston Price Cancer, and you'll find some articles talking about, and they don't exclude meat. Right? So it's a whole different approach to health and healing that you can be explored to see. But again, it's not just any meat or broth. It's grass-fed, organic, properly prepared, cultured, sprouted, all that sort of stuff, right?
Exactly. Yes.
To provide the nutrients in a very bioavailable way. So that's another. So, you know, some people might go the fully vegetarian route. Others might choose something more like a Weston Price approach to health. Both of them. And you never know what your diet may be. I met an individual in Knoxville at the first national CHD conference who I can't remember what he had. It wasn't cancer, but he was dying. I mean, he could not eat anything. He was just a mess and nobody could help him. And he ended up going on a completely raw food diet. And you know, organic, healthy, but raw food. Now, some people would go on an all raw food diet and they would not do well. But for him, it saved his life. And as long as he sticks to this diet, he's healthy, has energy, he's doing great. So, you know, one man's poison, another man's cure, as they say,
there
right?
There you go. That's exactly it.
Yeah. I also want to share with people, we have had on this show the wonderful Dr. Paul Merrick of the FLCCC. And he has, let me share with you, he's got a book. COVID, I mean, entering COVID, Dr. Paul Marek was one of the most highly respected critical care doctors on the planet. One of the most highly published, absolute brilliant man. He had created a treatment for sepsis that turned around the numbers of how many people could survive from sepsis. And it included IV vitamin C.
Yep.
And a form of vitamin B and steroid, right? And right. It's in use in hospitals today. He was just brilliant. But when COVID hit and he suddenly found himself up against walls he didn't know existed, except for vitamin C, he had learned if the walls existed a little bit with there, but nothing compared to with COVID. And he's gone so down the rabbit hole in exploring health and healing that he's now written a book called Cancer Care, the role of, let me see, am I sharing it? Here we go. The role of repurposed drugs and metabolic interventions in treating cancer.
There you go.
Yeah. So let's kind of scroll through this book a little bit. There's a place where I could read a sample. So I want to scroll through a little bit to show you what he goes over. So he talks about the societal impact of cancer. He explains what cancer is, understanding its pathogenetic causes, including, so he's looking at the spike protein, COVID as well as COVID shots, platelets, cancer stem cells, preventing cancer, the metabolic approach to treating cancer. And he talks about dietary caloric restriction, so what we're calling fasting, the ketogenic diet, and real food, all things we've covered, Javier. Mm-hmm. Management of cancer, what's that word? C-A-C-H-E-X-I-A. You probably know
cachexia.
Ah, thank you. What is that?
Cachexia is a wasting condition that occurs when you have cancer. Some cancers will emit or produce an effect that just causes your muscles and your organs to waste away.
Ah, okay. So there we go.
I think that's correct. I'll look that up.
So then the book goes on. It talks about metabolic and lifestyle interventions, glucose management, exercise, stress reduction, sleep. Sleep is huge. Melatonin is huge. You know, scientists all over their world are discovering the importance of sleep and melatonin in cancer. And then here's a list of some of the repurposed drugs that he talks about. Vitamin D3. It's interesting. He calls that a repurposed drug. Melatonin, green tea, metformin, curcumin. Mm-hmm. Mebendazole. I don't remember.
Mebendazole.
Do you remember what that is?
Mebendazole. No, I don't.
Okay. Well, we'll look that one up. Omega-3 fatty acids, berberine, atorvastatin. I'm not going to pronounce the things I can't read. So I'll just say mistletoe, wheatgrass, resveratrol, nigella sativa, that's a black seed oil, I know, high dose vitamin C, you know, just some wonderful. So he's mixing what we would consider actual drugs, but actually, and then natural treatments, nutrient protocols. And a fabulous book for people to have on their shelves to explore and to learn about, you know, so that if it ever, you know, you've got friends or loved ones going through it, there's a great place to explore. So thank you, Dr. Paul Marek, for...
Just to get back to you on cachexia. Cachexia is a wasting syndrome causing dramatic weight loss. So that's due to the cancer itself. And then mebendazole is an anti-parasitic drug against worm infections. As, you know, it's in probably in a category similar to ivermectin, but probably targeting different metabolic pathways. So all these antiparasitics are having all these recurring effects on cancer.
So talk to us about that. What are your thoughts about what's going on there, knowing what you know about the immune system? And especially I'm thinking gut, right? Because we know 70% of our immune system is in the gut. Parasites are in the gut. These antiparasites work in the gut. So something is going on there.
Yeah. So there's a couple of theories of how cancer gets started. And one theory that's starting to gain ground is when it's an infection of some sort, like a fungal infection or parasitic infection. And one way that parasites can actually optimize their growth and reproduction is by taking as much of the as much of the metabolic load off of the host towards themselves. And cancer are almost parasitic in a way, in that they hijack the body's energy stores to favor themselves. So the connection could be that parasites and cancer cells use similar pathways to draw away resources from the body. And maybe they're attacking the same metabolic pathways as that.
That's interesting. And we know there's a lot of environmental exposures that cause harm that increase your risk of cancer.
Right. Environmental exposures are a big one, yeah.
Yeah. So all of that working in this big tank, and that's why like there's not just one approach to treating cancer, even in the alternative world, because it has to do with what your journey to cancer was and what your journey away from cancer will be, which requires some good evaluation. So, you know, the sort of doctors that I personally visit and trust and would turn to for severe health issues would be chiropractors, functional medicine doctors who really are trying to look at cause and solution.
And again, one of the things that we have to remember is what Tennessee did with ivermectin was so incredibly important. And at the same time, what other states are doing, like Louisiana and Alabama, with all these bills restricting certain non-governmental agencies and dictating health decisions, that's something that needs to become even more pronounced in all the states. Mm-hmm. You have to start fighting for your health freedom across all board. And that also includes financial freedom as well.
Absolutely. Yes, we're going to be talking about that in the next hour, why that is so very important. One other alternative approach to cancer to look into is stem cells. Stem cells are accessible for treatments in the United States for some things, but not for others. Yeah. Some individuals do have to leave this nation, unfortunately, to get some cancer treatment done with stem cells. What do you know of stem cells? Have you explored that much yourself?
Well, there's two types of stem cells. There is, why is the name escaping me? There's adult stem cells and there's also fetal stem cells. Because of the moratorium on stem cells during the Bush 2 administration, there was a lot of work into adult stem cells. And what they found out is that adult stem cells have a great deal of potential, nearly as much or even greater in some cases than fetal stem cells. So stem cells can be used to repair. And in some cases, stem cells can be used to actually target certain types of cancer cells. You can reprogram, you can pull them out of the body, do some genetic manipulation, reintroduce them into the body to actually outcompete cancer stem cells or override certain cancer stem cells. And that way, instead of having a source of ever-present stem cells that produce more cancer cells, precursor cancer stem cells, they outcompete with them, and that way the tumor starts shrinking.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the stem placental donations can be used to harvest. It's a really good ethical source.
Exactly.
Of those stem cells to use. I know, people have recently got that done and it takes time though for that to begin to click over. I can't believe we only have 1 minute left, but I hope people listening really understand that there's so much hope that we have this brilliant design and there's a lot of people out there working. There's just so many choices and, you know, we stuck completely mainstream alternative, as it were. We really didn't veer anywhere that isn't really well researched and documented and put out there. So I guess with that, the Liberty Hour will not be on CHD TV this week. So if you want to listen to the next Vote for Freedom Hour, check out informedchoicewa.org's Rumble channel. We'll be there and we're also streaming to Twitter. So check it out. You've been listening to The Health Hour on Inform Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW. We'll take a quick break and we'll see you on Rumble. During this unprecedented response to an infection outbreak, it has been made very clear that shutting down lives and businesses is not sustainable or repeatable. We've also learned that it's unnecessary. Treatments exist and always exist. For 99% of the population, nutrients and oxidative therapies that support the immune system and improve symptoms are always available to address viral infections. For the less than 1% who need more, inexpensive, unpatentable drugs can be added to the nutrient therapies to improve outcomes. It's time each and every one of us empower ourselves with this knowledge. We need not ever bring our lives to a halt again. We can both save lives and retain the liberty that nourishes us body and soul. Learn more at healthyimmunitynow.org. That's healthyimmunitynow.org.
Children's Health Defense is a nonprofit organization with a mission to end childhood health epidemics by working aggressively to eliminate harmful exposures, hold those responsible accountable, and establish safeguards to prevent future harm. The Washington chapter of Children's Health Defense is stepping up at the state and local levels, but we can't do this without you. Join us at wa.childrenshealthdefense.org. Let's restore and defend children's health and their futures in Washington State.
The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.